Neat artwork, huh?
Yes.
We got great pictures.
Yes.
My ranch?
Yeah.
For what?
Does it have a name?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not sure I want to share it with TV Guy.
Okay, no, it's not TV Guy. USA Weekend was saying, I forgot to ask him the name of the ranch. So if you don't want it in there.
Rancho de Descanso.
Okay.
You don't have to say where it is.
That means
no.
Ranch of an unemployed actor.
Yeah.
With it's big mortgage.
It's not listed anyway.
Well, I am. I got unemployed 2 weeks ago. I delivered this thing as a producer, and I'm faced with being a family farmer raising organic avocados for almost no money, waiting for all those federal subsidies in the farm bill. There's none there. Just sad.
How much fun was it to do this? I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
It seemed like everybody just got along.
Well, it's all that. First of all, westerns are fun. I discovered that the first one I did a long time ago with Sam Elliott and Ben Johnson. They're fun for a lot of reasons. I mean, I grew up on these kind of movies. I didn't grow up as a cowboy. But more importantly, you know, as time has gone on and you work with people, and because I produced this and I've been with it about 2.5 years developing the script and everything, you start to pick your cast in a way. And since relationships were so important to this movie, I knew all the guys except for George Eads, who were going to play the Slash White Cowboys. And I knew, since most movies you get hired and the next day, everybody says, how do you do now? Show you've been friends for 8 years. We've already been friends, and I know that gives you an end. If you hire good actors also, which they are, that gives you this intangible thing that you can't get in the amount of rehearsal time you have, which in our case was zip. It was fun. And I think it's in the press kit, but Bobby Carradine, who did us a favor doing that part, really. He made the part grow, both by his talent and his way that he likes to steal scenes. Bobby said to the whole Slash Y group of cowboys, you know, the set's where it's at, and anybody who's not here, it's a big trouble. So everybody hung out on the set, and I think that shows. All of us, I think, had one of the times of our life doing the movie. And all the Slash Y guys say that, and I think that shows in the camaraderie of who they are. If you care about that group, you'll care about it, we felt, when it starts to split up. And that was our goal.
You got a lot of friends. You know a lot of people. How do you pick this group to be?
Well, this group also had the skills. You know, if you're working for Simon Windsor, you better know how to ride. You better, those skills you don't have, you better develop them, because you're going to do a lot of the stuff yourself. And while Simon is a very safe director, he demands a lot. And all these people had the skills. Again, we had horses available where people could practice, and that's extra money you have to convince TNT that's necessary to spend, but you don't have enough time to teach somebody how to ride from scratch, and you don't have enough time to teach somebody to rope, which is pretty hairy stuff when you're dealing with rope and steers that are way more than your horse. So that was the other criteria. These are the guys I knew had the skills and could play cowboys. They could come off a plane, step in the clothes, and go to work. Yeah.
Is this one of the projects that you could just take the TNT at any time, because you have a great relationship with them?
Well, they've been really good to me, and I hope I've been good to them. You know, and it's not that they just hire me in westerns. I've done a couple other movies that are real diverse. You know, I played the Democratic nominee for president in a movie, and I played a judge in a real dark a piece about a judge with an ethical dilemma with Marsha Mason, and so they've really seen me. They put up in a lot of areas, which is right where an actor wants to be. You want to do a lot of things. They've all succeeded very well in the ratings, but nothing beats what Turner does in westerns in terms of ratings. And the last western was the highest rated program in the history of cable television. We beat about 3 networks, regular networks. So it's been a great relationship, and while I don't only want to do westerns, it means I can always kind of have one in the works at TNT because they take a while. Me and my partner Michael Brandman have adapted, and that's intimidating. Books from Elmore Leonard, Louis L'Amour, and now Jack Schaefer, who wrote Monty Walsh and Shane, and that's a lot of producer. That's a lot of pressure as a producer, because books change when you make them into a screenplay. I think hopefully, but you somehow got to capture that spirit. So. They take a while. This one took 2.5 years, but I'll always, in the near future, have another one in the works. The deal isn't quite set, but it'll probably be a Louis L'Amour piece. And to know that's out there, not the least of which is financially, but more importantly, just that I do these Westerns and the public accepts me in them. It's really neat.
What's the deal, though, with the studios and Westerns, though? I mean, Westerns have been around since the beginning of film.
I don't get it, you know. They say, what's wrong with Westerns? I think it's really what's wrong with Hollywood, you know. You can't look at our ratings. One of the TNT execs he said, if this movie opened in a theater with the kind of response we got for Crossfire Trail, that's the equivalent of an $80 million opening. Now, those are the same people who go to movies. I think it's a question of good Westerns. And when good Westerns come along, they find an audience, not just Western fanatics. Two best pictures in the 90s were Westerns. So it's really a question of two things, I think. Hollywood trying to trick them up. I think you have to use modern storytelling techniques and modern filming techniques. But there's a traditional element that's part of our mythology that you don't lose. I don't mean in the corny way. There's a million kinds of Westerns, as Unforgiven proved. The other thing is in Hollywood nowadays, the deal, and certainly mine did too, on this movie, the deal precedes the material. So casting of the main roles becomes a byproduct of the deal, not who's right for it. You know, if you can get two of the phone book people, phone book people are the people who could say, I'll do the phone book and Hollywood will make a $100 million movie. If you sign those two up, the studios don't really care what the movie is. And that's a mistake. I mean, it may be an unavoidable mistake, but certain people don't work in Westerns, just like certain people who work in Westerns don't work in other things. And some people are lucky enough to be able to cross over. I know it when I see it, but I don't know. You never really know till you try it. I didn't know George Eads, who we were thrilled to get. I didn't know he was from Texas, and I didn't know. He came in red, and I wasn't there. And he was nice enough, one of the leads in CSI, to come in and read for the part. He wanted to do it so much. And when I saw the tape, I said, we got to get him. And they said, well, he's decided not to do it. He's doing CSI, and he's doing a movie in Montreal, and he wants to rest. And I called him in Montreal. I said, this doesn't sound right. And I called him. And he was, it had taken us too long from when he read to get back to him, even though he was our first choice. So he said, well, it means a lot that you called. And just so you know, I grew up in Texas. And I've always wanted to be in a big Western, and can we do a handshake over the phone? And George was on board, but I didn't know that. So he just seemed like he'd fit. And the bonus was he already knew how to ride and do a lot of stuff. Although George, being George, thinks he can ride better than he can ride, but that's George. That's most of us.
Well, how about you? How are you?
I'm good. I mean, I learned... I got some funny home movies. I just did an A&E biography, and you should see the home movies of me riding a horse, you know, strapped in at the pony rides. That's the way I grew up in the suburbs, you know. But I had to learn for a movie, The Sacketts. And the director was a real taskmaster named Bob Totten, and you better know your stuff. It's a little like John Ford in the way he could get mad at you. But a great director, great guy. So I learned to ride, and then... After Magnum, I really felt I wanted some land and would like a lifestyle on a ranch. And who knows with your dreams whether you're right, but mine turned out to be right. I like it. Now, I don't ride all the time because I'm a much cheaper laborer than the rest of the guys I hire. So I kind of do most of the manual labor at the ranch. And but if I got a movie coming up, I ride. So I'm good now, and I'm also smart enough to admit what I don't know, and then the other guys will help you, the wranglers and all. But I can ride well. And if you see the movie, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but you see most of us are riding most of the time. You can't, the shots we got, you can't double. And it's a little dangerous, a little hairy. All you got to do is step in one gopher hole, and you and your horse are kind of off to the races. But
Monty is afraid of change. And he often is not with the change. And I kind of like the way you made it.
I don't think he's afraid of it. I think it is foreign. He may be afraid of the unknown. I think it's more. Look, I think it's a danger in the modern world maybe to define yourself by what you do. Who you are shouldn't probably be what you do, because we live in a pretty soft material age. But these guys did in those times. And in some way it was so much simpler that I think there was something noble about it. And any change to Monty, he didn't care so much about change, he just cared about the fact that, as he put it, if he changed, he'd be spitting on his whole life. And that's his code. He's a simple man. He doesn't define things in terms of this is my code. He doesn't even know, he's never articulated that he's in love with Isabella Rossellini. He doesn't even think about the fact that he's monogamous. He must be in love with her. Monty is a day at a time cowboy. They don't, you know, pay is incidental. They get it at the end of the month, and they blow it all in a day in a saloon. That's what they did. And that's what he's content doing, and that's how he defined himself. And I really like this theme. It's a tricky theme because the villain of the piece is time. And we felt to show that you have to first have the courage to feel that showing the life as it should be is entertaining enough till you really get to the problems. You know, we don't have a shootout in our first sequence. And in that sense, we shot it, which I think you can do on cable as opposed to network TV. It opens very much like a feature film. It opens more, you know, assuming you have an audience without their remote control sitting in a theater for enough time to get to know the people. And that took a certain amount of courage. It's not to say we didn't get notes otherwise, but we felt, you know, movies play very well on TV. Cable, and particularly TNT, is known for movies. Let's make this look like a movie.
What about working with
Isabella
Rossellini?
That's great. She's just terrific. Well, you know, I didn't know her. And I can't imagine not thinking of her. But the role of Martine, right when we finished a draft that I really thought we were finally in the ballpark where we wanted to be with the script, I showed it to my wife, and I said, who are we going to get for Martine? And she said, well, there's only one person. And I said, who? She said, Isabella Rossellini. And I said, you're right. There's only one person. And I talked to my partner, Michael Bramman, and I said, I got a great idea. Jilly gave me a great idea for Martine, Isabella Rossellini. He said, there's only one person. We got to get her. And thank God, you know, she's very choosy. She read the script, as did most people, and just wanted to be in the movie. So we go to New York to announce this thing to the advertisers, whatever they call that deal you do. And I guess it sold out in an hour after we got off the stage because of the last movie. And we go to her apartment, Michael and I, I felt like about a 12-year-old kid, boy, because that's who she is, and she's as friendly and as full of life and beautiful, and she's just a neat person. And the reason she's such a big star is I think she is liked equally by men and women. It's possible to pander to one gender and lose the others, but she has that unique quality where women love her, and men certainly do. And she brought all that to the movie, and it was up to me to raise my level of work to hers.
Did you ask her, something I've always wondered is, why do the Italians have an affinity with Westerns? They've made some of the best Westerns ever.
I don't know. Why does an Aussie director, why is he, in my opinion, the man, if you're directing? There's something in the human spirit. I don't know what it is with Italians. I haven't thought of that before. But you're right. They certainly paid homage to it in that whole Eastwood era. And to pay homage, you have to really take the medium seriously and have had some kind of visceral connection. It certainly wasn't somebody who said, I know, we'll exploit Westerns. It was a guy, Leone and all those guys, who obviously had a deep feeling for them and wanted to make their own. I think it's, look at, I've done movies all over the world with crews where sometimes they said action in four or five languages, and we speak a common language in film, and it, there's great hope for the world in that if we do things that actually say something. And I think that it has something to do with it, but you're right, Italians, Australians certainly get it, but I think American culture, both of them are, both of Americans and Australians, we have relatively young cultures, there's great similarities. And Simon's a horseman, so that's why I think, and Simon is, I think, far and away the finest director in this genre that you could get. And I would, you know, Simon, this is my, I hope it's not the end, that would be a trilogy. This is our third, but we're going to do some more. But, you know, when Simon saw this script, it has nothing to do with Crossfire or Quigley, which he loves and I love. But he said, you know, I think this is closer to Lonesome Dove than in tone than the other two. And every Western takes on its own thing. And I think so, too. I wouldn't compare it to Lonesome Dove. That's up to other people. But I do think it has that sense of character and takes the time to get to know the people as opposed to just, you know, shooting up the landscape.
Well, when you think of the landscape, obviously, when I think of Western, just think of that wide open.
That's, well, I think you should. Well, I that's my own personal philosophy in almost any Western I can think of, and certainly in this Western where you're trying to get the audience to understand the nature of the life and the land and love it. The land is a character in your film, and if you don't treat it as such, if you got a bunch of talking heads in close-up after you go all that way to get the beautiful scenery. But it's not enough to shoot beauty shots. They somehow got to be integrated with enough energy and life and story. But you can tell story by shooting the land just as easy as you can with dialogue if you're a director who is geared that way. The other thing I really thought we had going for us was the simple fact that I don't know what made me think of this movie. Did I tell you guys this? I don't know what interview I've done. But, you know, when they said, what do you want to do after the last one? That was around the turn of the century. And I had seen the movie Monty Walsh. And I'd always remembered it. And I loved that theme. I thought it was kind of a good movie that was flawed that you could remake. But I never thought of it in those terms. But we're going through the millennium, and I suddenly realized, you know, these are comparable themes, and those that aren't necessarily Western fanatics could certainly identify with something they've just been through. I think I certainly have a nostalgia for our old friend, the 20th century. I feel a little left behind. And so that's the way you make decisions. That being said, we weren't happy to do a remake of the original film, which was early 70s. And there was a great cynicism or skepticism. I think it crossed into cynicism in a lot of the pictures then. You know, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, a picture I love. Warren Beatty dies in the snow. You know, and they were kind of saying, why bother being born? Because you're going to die anyway. So it wasn't until I read the book that I understood what the picture we had to make and that we... And since we had some juice at Turner, we got the money not only to buy the screenplay, but to buy the book rights, too. And that was the real key, because there's stuff in Jack Schaefer's book that is spectacular. And the spirit of his book was the key to discovering who Monty was and how we should write him.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
There's a sort of hobbit. Just a left turn. You know, I watched Confession of Dangerous Mind the other night about the dating game, and I think you were on the dating game.
I was, twice, yeah. Just bizarre. No, I lost both times. I was just a college kid at SC studying business. And it became a thing in the fraternities and sororities to go on the dating game. And a lot of the guys at SC and their girlfriends would rig the thing, you know. They'd go on, and they'd always wanted personal stories when you went into interviews. Is there anybody that you dated that it didn't work out that you'd still like to date? Because they'd always say, and you know this bachelor. And they'd tell you the story. Well, they'd make up stories, and then they'd have somebody else in the audience going, and they'd get a good date. I didn't do that, but I wasn't funny either. It's embarrassing, but it'll be with me forever. They just keep bringing it out. I think it, the A&E biography, they had to find that, you know. Oh, we got to find your dating game. I said, oh, good. Yeah, thanks.
Did you meet Chuck Barris, and is he a madman?
He was an energized man. I didn't meet him for farther than that. I didn't know who Chuck Barris was. Actually, a guy named Jim Lang was the host. Chuck was a producer, I think. Now, I was a huge Gong Show fan, though. That was after that. And that was a great show. I don't know what was going on, but it must have been, maybe the movie tells us. It was a lot of fun.
Was it true you were supposed to play Indiana Jones?
Yeah, but as long as you don't write that I turned it down. But that's, it's kind of old story, but yeah, I tested for it. I was probably, like most parts, the last guy in town to do a screen test, and Stephen and George offered it to me, and I said, well, I've done this pilot. I think it has a good shot of going on the air. It's called Magnum, and they said, oh, that's no problem. We get cards to play with CBS. Even if they want to buy it, we'll just get them to wait. And the longer they talked to CBS, the more CBS decided they didn't want somebody in a movie, too. And finally CBS said, no way. And at that point, I had to leave the picture. But that's not me turning it down. I mean, they wouldn't let anybody read a script. They were very secretive, and the script, the pages were serial numbered. And when they offered it to me, Stephen and George said, go in the room and read the script, let us know what you think. And up till then, I was kind of philosophic, you know. I said, well, these guys are big guys, but I don't know what it's like. And I got to page 8, and I just went, oh, shit. It was all on the page. It was really good, and everything you saw in the film. So, that being said, you know, I think I would have done a good job, but that's Harrison Ford's thing, and God knows he did it well.
Any more Friends episodes?
They haven't called, but you know, it's flattering. You know, they were really good to me, and they're good writers on the show, and it wasn't like some piece of stunt casting for Sweeps, although they put it on in Sweeps. They really gave the character three dimensions, and I did 9 of them, and I became a part of the ensemble for a while, and I'm a big fan, so it was a thrill. So, you know, I hear they're talking, they talk about my character. They don't show a picture, they don't do anything, and people still know who he is, and it's been, I think, like 3 years since I've been on, so they haven't called, but being a little prejudiced about Richard, I think Monica really still deeply loves Richard. But I don't know, it's getting late if they go off this year, isn't it? Aren't they just about shot out? Or they're at least into their final ideas. So they did call and say hi. Marta and David called and said hi. And I took an ad out. They did a celebration of Friends in the trades, and I took an ad I couldn't afford out saying thanks for Richard. And they called up and said, that was sweet, thank you. But they didn't say, how about coming back on the show?
The thing here says, you remember the California National Guard during the Watts riots. Is
that true? No, not during the Watts riots, right after the Watts riots, yeah.
Were you called into action?
I was in the Isla Vista riots. I was in an infantry unit. We were activated for Vietnam after I got back from active duty, and then they changed our orders. My bags were packed. I was a 6'4" machine gunner in a weapons squad, which is very high on the sniper's list. and I didn't go because they changed their orders. But we were the top priority unit in the state for civil disturbance. So I was at the Isla Vista riots and got a real insight into what college campus activism in those days was all about. You know what ended the Isla Vista riots? I can speak from personal. It rained. It started raining, so everybody went indoors and had a party instead.
Mm. There is that idea that he is noble in our minds because he's never going to betray himself. He's always going to betray himself. Is there also an element, is he going to be a survivor, though? Because
I don't, I think he is, I hope we say at the end of the movie he will survive. If you read the book, he stays within that framework, but what he does changes, but there's some line that Monty doesn't think in that way. He's also a very flawed character. He needles people too much. He's stubborn. He deals with issues much too simply in some ways. But those are the fun guys to play. Is he a survivor? I don't know. I don't know whether that's practical, but I know that's... and I think audiences will say, boy, that's what I'd like to be able to do. You know, it's like when the guy doesn't care about his job or the woman and throws the compromise offer in the boss's face, whatever it may be, and says, I ain't going to spit on my life like Monty does. I think that's what we'd like to do, and that's what movies are about. And you temper that with reality. If he's had five kids and a wife, Monty's not a very noble guy, is he? If they're all going to starve. But that instinct is something we should nurture, all of us, you know, particularly in a free society, you know, because that's what it's about. But, yeah, I don't know whether he's a survivor. I think he would always survive, though.
Because you're such a fan of the genre, mm. does it take anything away from the Western for you as a fan when you're actually filming a Western? You're all into the nuts and bolts of filming. Does it take away the luster of watching it fresh, like when you were a kid?
It does. It's a whole different thing now. Although I got, because I produced the last few years of Magnum, I'm really used to seeing myself on film, like in dailies and all that. Doesn't freak me out anymore. Some actors, you know, they go nuts. And they should, you know. I'm kind of used to that. It's hard wearing two hats. I don't want to produce everything I'm in. In this case, I know a lot about the genre and I really want an input. I've seen a lot of Westerns I don't like. I've seen a lot of inaccuracies I don't like, and so it's a hat I wear. It doesn't pay well. They pay me to act, really, but I get the other position, and it means a lot. But yeah, it's different. You know, this is 2.5 years. Movies require so much patience. You know, and to go from a blank page and then adapt a book, to cast the movie, to find the money, to do the movie, to then spend 4 months in post-production and argue over which frame you should cut to the next shot on, and then the level, that music's not loud enough. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. I mean, that's the process, and it requires so much faith in the ultimate, in keeping your eye on the ball, but patience and... Yeah, it's real frustrating, and it isn't, you know, Isabella worked 5 days. Thank God I went to New York and saw her, because we climbed in bed day one, all day. You know, we shot all our bed scenes, you know, and it's how do you do, okay, that's, and we didn't want, both of us talked enough, I was a little boyish, but we talked enough to know we don't like to see love scenes where actors are embarrassed. I don't like to see love scenes where two actors who've just made love have put a sheet between them because they're embarrassed to have their bodies touch, because lovers don't do that. So she's a pro and I'm a pro, and you just do it. And but it was kind of fun. You know, the first one we did is Monty. They've made love. Monty wants to do it again, but he'd like to roll a cigarette first. And that's not her agenda. So the first scene we did, she's blowing in my ear and everything else. And I'm not that good at hand rolling cigarettes anyway. So that was fun. And there wasn't a lot of pretending, because you had a lot of obstacles, and you had Isabella Rossellini at your side. trying to seduce you and kiss your ear and blow in your ear. So it was an easy scene. But still a little, you know, it's new. You, how do you do? Okay, let's get in bed.
Are you a fan of test audience?
No.
So you didn't have to do this?
No, if this was a feature, they'd test it. Look, I think if you do a movie right, and I've seen it happen with some of my movies, and two people walk out of 100, and 90 of them say, I love this movie, and 8 say, eh, and 2 walked out. If you don't make somebody walk out of a movie, you haven't made any kind of statement at all. They all can't like it, and they shouldn't like it. And if you don't, and testing, first of all, I talked to a lot of guys that did a lot of consensus work in D.C. for charities and stuff, and I met a lot of the, I met Clinton's poll guy and the guy who, the Republican guy who came up with the contract with America, and all these pollsters, I said, and I explained, I said, what do you think of these, this Hollywood testing? And they said, well, their models are primitive, you know, they said, if we use their kind of testing, we'd all be out of business. Because they're based on what people liked already. They can't say what they're going to like, nor what they'll be challenged by. So, yeah, I don't. It's a necessary thing because I think studio execs want it because they say, it's not my fault. Look at the testing. Tested great. You know, and look who I cast. They're not right for the parts, but they're big. So I'm not a fan of all that, but it's a common lament. You know, film is a business of compromise, and that may very well be part of it, you know. It's just you press through all that stuff and try and make some kind of statement and entertain people, and that's all part of it, though.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Sure. I haven't seen those yet.